This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's me, Dale, in a rare hosting position. I've taken over Joe, or I suppose Cardi's duties. He's clearly the most hosty of all the hosts.
He's a big hosty boy these days. Yeah. He loves it.
I'm joined with Joe Screbbles. Hello, Joe.
You're joined with me.
Yes. That's right. I'm not correcting that. No.
It's like the end of Akira or some shit. We're just this shambling beast. I like it.
And I'm also joined with Matt as well.
Am I on your left? Or are we like a three kind of headed monster now, conjoined?
I like to think
absolutely.
That you're...
we are a Cerberus sort of situation.
Nice. I think you're a two-headed monster and I'm like the little Krang in your belly.
Oh, Krang. I haven't thought about Krang in a long time.
I think about Krang quite a lot. I think it...
Was he in the new Turtles movies?
I don't know. I think there was the big lad that carries him around. He must have been. Or am I just thinking of Quato from Total Recall, who's Krang with attitude. That's his whole deal.
I was going to say he has arms, but Krang had little tiny like T-Rex arms, didn't he, actually? Like little ones hanging out the side.
Was it arms or did he have little... Were they just like little sort of nascent tentacles? Yeah, brain tentacles.
Who knows? Write in if you know.
Big Krang discussion. That's how we start this kind of podcast.
Anyway, it's what we got today. We've had another episode of the Falcon Winter Soldier. We're not going to go into spoilers of it, but I think it's, you know, we've just passed the halfway point. It's six episodes, right, this season? So yeah, we're past the halfway point. Just want to get everyone's general thoughts so far. What are we thinking? Matt, you're writing the review for IGN, so you're probably a good place to start.
Yeah, I really like this show, and I sometimes feel I might be a bit of an outlier on this because general internet feeling seems to be that this is like quite a slow, dragging show that's not kind of working for a lot of people. I think it's great because it's really meaty and chewy, and it's full of lots of fascinating dissections of American life, which is kind of the things that... You know how kind of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies kind of like really dissect the idea of what it would mean for a real man to pretend to be a bat?
Yeah.
Like, I like that this is kind of on a similar vibe to that, but looking at real big, meaty elements that are kind of like, what does it mean to be in power? What do establishments mean to the people? What do superheroes mean to people? And what does the identity of Captain America mean? And it consistently explores that from episode to episode, which does sometimes mean that when I'm writing my reviews, I'm constantly writing about the same topic over and over. But it demonstrates a consistency that show knows what it wants to talk about and it knows where its political headings are. And each episode does dig deeper and deeper into that as more facets of the characters are explored. And I think it's doing a really interesting job of that, and I like it a lot. And I think it's grown in confidence over the episodes in that.
Yeah, 100%. I think I was watching it at lunchtime today and I was thinking about how I'm enjoying the real world ramifications of the blip that aren't, you know, used for comedy like they were in Spider-Man. Mm. And that makes sense for that film. But this one is like, you know, this is really the boots on the ground, like the real world people, how it truly affected them, especially the people that didn't disappear as well. I think that's my favorite aspect of it. Like, I'm surprised that the internet are not enjoying it as much. Like, I'm enjoying this a lot more than WandaVision. And I didn't dislike WandaVision. I just don't think I was as enamored with it as some people were, perhaps.
I think I like it less than you two on a just an MCU-y level. And I think mm-hmm. that accounts for why there's a muted reception to it. Because people went into it, myself included, being like, big, fun, spy thriller, guys punching mm-hmm. through walls and a flying boy. and like, there, you know, there is a stupid part of me that really wants that kind of thing. And that's what I miss about MCU movies, you know? Like, there are two or three time yearly dose of, like, mad, loud bullshit with fun people quipping at each other. That is not to say that I'm not admiring Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I totally agree. And Dale, you've hit on the thing for me, is I love that the MCU is now at a place where it's confident enough to begin exploring the ramifications of its own stupid sci-fi bullshit. Yeah. Like, to actually go, the idea that a group of very talented writers have had to sit around somewhere in California and go, what would happen if half of people on Earth disappeared for 5 years and then came back? And there's really cool stuff in there. And I love the explorations of and the reflections on, like, Black America and, you know, apart from anything else, I love how much time it's spent in Latvia. I haven't seen Latvia in anything for a while, my motherland. So that's good. There's a lot I think is really interesting about it. I think maybe the heart of the issue in terms of what drags for me a bit is that I am not interested in US Agent and John Walker's stuff. It feels very... Something about that segment of the show feels extremely one note to me and feels like it... there are moments in this latest episode that I felt I could have predicted from the first episode. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the satisfaction is... that the MCU-y bits aren't going as far as I think they would in a film. But it's doing a lot of other interesting stuff. It just happens to be a lot quieter. I certainly am not, I'm not waking up every week and being like, this is my appointment viewing, like I was mm-hmm. for WandaVision to an extent, except towards the end. I'm torn on it. I think I've sounded more negative than I mean to be. I'm not as into it as I wanted to be, but I still think it's doing really cool stuff. It's just different cool stuff to what I was expecting.
I'm quite surprised by the lack of superhero flair. Maybe not in the fourth episode or the first, definitely not in the first one, but in the second and third episode, like, I don't think Sam was ever in his Falcon outfit for those.
He's been out of it for quite a while. And obviously, like, the most two recent ones are written by Derek Colstad, who wrote not just Nobody that we spoke about a few weeks ago, but also he's the John Wick writer. And I think episode three, without giving away where that is set and what happens, is very kind of John Wick-y, and it's a very slick espionage. Quite fun. That's the one that maybe goes a little bit too far on the buddy comedy, even though I think it has better buddy comedy dialogue than the episode that preceded it. I think its attempt at comedy is very, very hit and miss. But I am pleased that the most recent one basically ditches all of that and just goes super serious. And it's like, you know what? We're actually dealing with quite complicated issues here, and we're just going to...
You say that, but there is that one line that I genuinely loved about Baron Zemo doing a really annoying head tilt, and then he just untilts his head. It's like, that is a funny joke. It also ties into Daniel Brühl's Zemo is so weird, and I really like it. Like... he's not the villain that you would think he is, at least on the outside, the way it's become like a triple header to some extent. Like, he's in a lot of that show in a way that I wasn't expecting. He was in the trailer, so this doesn't count as spoilers.
And we all knew that he was there.
I would say he feels like a bit of a departure from what he was in Civil War. Like, he definitely feels like he's brought in some comedy chops now. He's having a bit more fun with life.
I'm totally fine with that, especially when we get the little dancing scenes of him and Dale puts it to our music, which I think by the time you're listening to this, you'll be able to see on Twitter.
Hopefully.
It really fits. Yeah,
he's slippery, isn't he, which is a quite like about him. There's this kind of... he's always been a character, like, Civil War sets him up as a character where, yes, he's a villain, but his motivations are things that you could sort of empathize with, and you understand where he's coming from. And I think there's a lot of that to him here, but because he's got that slipperiness, he's one of those villains that you sort of not necessarily root for, but you want to watch what they're doing.
Yeah, the villain situation is quite tricky right now, like, not going into too much spoilers, but obviously you've got first three episodes sets up a villain, but then they don't necessarily feel like traditional villains, and then we've got potential other villains coming into play as well. So I'm like, two episodes doesn't feel like enough right now to me to wrap this up.
There's a lot left, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm very curious to see, like, you know, how they're going to bring this all together. I'm sure they're going to nail it. Or set up a second series, maybe. Who knows? Have they actually said anything about that? I know they said they're not doing one for WandaVision, right?
Yeah, I get the impression quite a lot of these are supposed to be one-shots, but it's maybe that finger case of it might be a one-shot for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, depending on what the storyline's here. Who's to say there won't be just the Falcon show or the Winter Soldier show or US Agent show? You know, there might be many things that could come out of it.
I think, I'm interested to see... I'm interested to see, again, after WandaVision, whether there's a payoff here in terms of, like, connections as well. Like, WandaVision is very clearly connecting to certain stuff at the end of it. This one seems to be introducing more than connecting more. But I'm interested... I'm very interested to see where it lands, because we knew going into WandaVision that it would connect to stuff. We don't know what this is aiming to do, and I think that's exciting. It's fun to see the MCU building because it hasn't done that for a little bit. It's sort of woven a lot. And so I think there's something exciting about watching this show maybe start to drop little threads and kind of, you know, start to build breadcrumb trails to other stuff. You wonder where it's going to head with that.
It's so invested in its characters, right, that I feel like it's a show that's designed to give you the journey of... Whether it's Sam or Bucky that becomes the headline sort of act by the end of it, it's investing in those characters so heavily, more so than it really invests in its own plot, that I feel like it is sort of setting them up for bigger things on, you know, silver screen rather than small screen.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm interested, I mean, there's a lot of chatter about it's one thing seems to be that it's doing some tiny X-Men-y things, not in characters, but in terms of places it's setting up and that kind of thing.
Right.
I'm very interested to know whether this is Marvel fucking with us again or whether this is... It feels like it's intentional at this point. Like, it feels there's something being dropped here. As we speak, there was an interesting story this morning where they set up a website that ties into the fiction of the show about this one location. And that website launched with a bunch of Easter eggs that are all related to X-Men. And then a few hours later, they were all gone. And I think that it was just someone at Marvel had some fun, and then someone else at Marvel went, no, thank you. That's a bit much.
I mean, the ones in this one feel like, I mean, the fact that I haven't noticed, I think there's only one of them I really notice, a lot more subtle compared to the Quicksilver. This is just the Quicksilver from
absolutely.
X-Men.
But it does feel a bit like they're having some fun kind of dropping these moments of, we know you know these are X-Men things if you care about the comics. And I'm into that. Like, I don't mind them. I know the fan theory stuff got a bit out of control with WandaVision, but I'm kind of into them just teasing us a bit more because, you know, it's a new phase and no one really knows where it's going, and there's some stuff to play with there.
Hey, as someone who's like one of the world's biggest fans of Lost, if we're doing weekly things where we can try and find secrets and hidden messages, what we can all talk about, then I'm into it. That's peak television to me.
He's the mystery box boy.
We'll just see if it has a satisfying conclusion or not. I think Lost was a satisfying conclusion. Many people disagree. Anyway, speaking of satisfying... just satisfying. Outriders, let's talk a little bit more about that. I know we touched on it last week, I believe.
But and when Matt, the demo came out, we've had multiple drops.
But Matt, you've played it a lot. I've also played it a lot. Joe, I don't know how much have you not played
it. I have not played it a lot. I've played maybe an hour beyond the demo area. And then I just got... It's not that I got bored or anything, although I'm told I probably would. it's just being pulled onto other stuff, really. Monster Hunter exists. It's pretty difficult for me right now.
That's absolutely fair. I have a sort of mixed feelings with this. I know, Matt, I think you're leaning a bit more negative than I am right now. Mm-hmm. But I remember when me and Matt covered this for an IGN first, a long, long time ago now, probably like 10 months ago or something. And I remember coming out of it thinking I probably won't carry on playing this because I felt like I had my fill. But I guess time was a healer and something pulled me back in. And I still find great satisfaction with the abilities. And I think the best thing about this game currently for me is the mods. like seeing how a mod can affect my character. Like Matt, you told me last night, oh, we were playing, Jesse had a mod which struck lightning down when he fired a gun on someone. And after we finished playing last night, I carried on playing for a bit and I got that mod.
Oh, nice.
And it's like incredibly satisfying how these little attachments can just change your loadout completely and how it works together. And that's the most exciting thing for me. Obviously, there's the, you know, the addictive element of the loot grind as well, but we get that in a lot of games. But there's a lot of negative as well with this game. What are some of your thoughts there?
So I think, like you say, that mod system is excellent. But I do think the way that the mod system sort of undervalues the weapons a little bit, because it's the mod that's the important bit, not the gun. So when you get a legendary, which are the only guns in the game that look any visually distinct, everything else just looks like a gun that a seven-year-old's drawn. But when you get those, there's not necessarily any impetus to stick with them because the stats disappear very, very quickly. Yeah. Then you might as well just rip the things that were interesting about that gun and stick them on another one. So whereas in Destiny when you, or Borderlands, when you get like a really cool gun, there's an impetus to stick with it and make it your own. There's less there, which does admittedly give some flexibility, which I do like. But for me, it's now come to the point of where, yes, I like using the abilities, even though I'm still using the core three abilities it gave me at the start of the game, because I feel like everything it's given me since isn't working for the way its combat encounters are set up, because those combat encounters feel incredibly one note. And I feel like I've been doing the same encounter for almost 20 hours now. And because it's awkward because I'm playing Doom Eternal at the same time, I'm playing the DLC there, and its encounter design very much uses different enemies in different patterns and introduces them into the battle arenas in different ways to almost, this is going to very much sound like me doing game design wank, but it's almost like it plays a different song with the notes, and each note is a different enemy. Sure. And so you've got different tracks that you effectively fight to, whereas I find I'm playing the same resetting kind of track with Outriders quite frequently, and it's either monsters that all look the same, you get waves of little ones and then you get a big wave of big ones and then some flying ones turn up and then rinse repeat. Or the bad guys are always like, you get a bunch of riflemen, there's a bunch of snipers on the back perch, and then some things will run at you, and then there'll be like eight of the fucking captains that have giant guns that take you like minutes and minutes and minutes to grind down. And I've done that so many times now that because it doesn't offer me any real strong enemy variety or encounter design variety, I've got three abilities that work very well, and it doesn't feel like it's working with me to mix that up. And so what I think is its greatest strengths, which is actually its combat and using those abilities, I don't think it's doing anything interesting as the campaign progresses to force me to think about how I use those abilities.
I think that's that's the weird thing about it. It's like they made such a big deal about this not being a live service game and not being, you know, not being massively multiplayer and all that kind of stuff. But all the enemies feel like they're designed for a bad internet connection. Mm-hmm. You know, like how those old MMOs feel bad to do combat in because they couldn't work out how to make combat work for 50 people at once. None of the enemies react very much. None of the enemies seem to, like, particularly those captains, like, they are very, a game that gives you so many powers and so many ways to use powers, for them to feel so much like they just bounce off of people half the time, three quarters of the time even, like, it's a very odd decision. Like, I think about that Destiny decision a lot, about where someone told me, I can't remember who it was, that all the Destiny enemies' projectiles move slowly because that's the best way to do an online being shot at by an enemy, like, because it tracks well enough and it doesn't feel unfair. But the upshot of that is that Destiny's combat encounters are really fluid and full of movement and full of interest. And I know comparing Destiny to Outriders is probably unfair given the scales of budget at work here, but like, there's something about Outriders combat that looks like it's trying to get there with a bit of that doomy onslaughty like combat, but it just can't manage both sides well enough. It feels somewhere stuck in the middle. It's quite odd.
It's a shame, really, because there's a lot there that I think that's worth loving. And like, I don't think it's in the aesthetic, and I don't think it's in the world, and the story's boring as fuck.
Definitely
and all of
not
this
the story. No,
but I think there's like, there was something at when me and Dale went to play it, like, I thought there was something there that I enjoyed, and I found it again in the demo, but it's just, it never evolves past that point. And there's a boss fight that me and Cardi did that, so me and Cardi have played it through entirely, basically. And there's this boss fight, which I guess is probably about halfway through the game, which was just one of these things, and I don't like this design anyway in games, period, from, you know, history of it, but where your boss is sort of off screen and you can't actually get on top of it. And so you just have to fire at almost like this background item. Yeah. And that fight must have taken 40 minutes to do, and we're playing it on whatever the highest difficulty we're naturally getting to, because obviously there's that world tier system, and when it boosts us up, we're like, okay, we'll stick with it, you know, that's the way we're supposed to get better loot. But it just means that it doesn't feel like it's necessarily harder, it just feels like everything takes longer. Yes. And when things take longer, those flashy effects like gradually become background noise rather than a really cool thing I'm doing.
Yep.
And I want to like it, but yeah.
I think we did a boss battle last night as well, me and Matt and Cardi. Mm-hmm. And again, like, there was never any challenge with it. It never felt like we were having to learn a rhythm or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just unload until they're dead. And that could take you 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was very much a sort of rinse and repeat cycle. I think, you know, I do like elements of it. Like I said, I do like the mods and the powers. Like what you said, Joe, I wish they'd put some extra thought into like what they did for the mods and the powers into enemies and variety of enemies as well. I don't see why they couldn't come up with like another dozen type of enemies that you can fight against. But it does feel kind of like the same, but it has that element what all these games have, which is the, you know, the chase for the loot, right? What is the next shiny thing I'm going to get, and what is that going to do?
Yeah.
I do think this game... I have been in the situation several times where I've had a gun what I really like, and it feels like such a chore to bring that gun up with me that I just have to sacrifice it for the next gun, which I don't like as much, but has much better points.
Yeah.
And I feel like that happens a lot quicker than it normally does in these sort of games, and that can be slightly frustrating. Now I'm just holding on to these guns that are severely underleveled, but I like them, and I'm hoping at one point I'll have enough... like equipment, bits and bobs, whatever they're called, iron and things like that, to bring it up to the level. So that part's slightly frustrating. Yeah. I do think I am going to see it through, though.
Oh, yeah, I will. Because at the end of the day, I quite like having a game to play with mates. Like, that is a nice thing to do, and it's a fresh way of doing it, you know, so there's that there. I do wish it would make that easier, because I have not been able to play an hour of this game without it either crashing and booting me out, losing connection to the main game, or being stuck on the sign-in page for 4 minutes.
I was on it, no joke, I was on it for about 15 minutes last night while waiting.
I was listening to you.
Just listening to you two having a good time. Oh, well, a mixed time. Yeah. I'm just sitting there. I was just on my phone just waiting for to be signed in for the longest time. Obviously, that's early launch issues. Hopefully they'll iron that sort of stuff out, but will we be playing the game by the time they fix all that stuff?
It's really funny in terms of the you mentioned the games to play with mates and bad boss battles. I think I've mentioned this to you already, at least, Matt, but I've been playing a lot of Sea of Thieves recently and doing just the campaign stuff in that, the Tall Tales, and that game is so good at being a game with mates almost the whole time that it makes it, it just feels like there's very little reason for me to play Outriders at the same time as playing Sea of Thieves, because I know which one is better to just hang out in. It's basically a floating chat room. But the there are two boss battles. I hope there's only two. I've only got one more campaign mission to do in the Sea of Thieves campaign that are so fucking shit that we just they take like half an hour, 45 minutes, just shooting one skeleton over and over again, continually dying and getting blown up, and it's just boring as fuck. But the idea that Outriders has boss battles that feel the same as Sea of Thieves is an absolute joke to me. Like, when you told me about that, I was like, Sea of Thieves is a game that struggles with its own construction for that. Outriders is literally built to do this, and it can't get it right. It's so weird. What a strange thing. Like, I will say, and I think we said this before, I'm delighted that a game like Outriders is being made right now.
Oh,
like,
yeah, definitely.
It sucks that it's not as good as we'd want it to be, but it's really cool that people are still funding games like this, like weird experimental takes on existing ideas. I'm totally into that, and People Can Fly are a company that I would always like to see do that kind of thing.
Especially things that where it feels like that idea has been cemented with like popular games that have sort of cornered the market, and you think that maybe there's no room there anymore. Like, you've got your Destiny, you've got your Division, you've got Avengers even as well, same publisher as well. So it's cool that they've done it. But, you know, hopefully they fix some of these things in the future, some of the technical issues anyway. And then I saw they were making adjustments to which character is it? It's the one that Cardi plays.
Oh, you're a Trickster.
Trickster, yes. Mm-hmm. I saw somebody tweeting that they were nerfing the Trickster.
Oh, of course they are. Best character by far, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, actually. Just like, there was great thought put into what characters we were playing at the start, like who's going to play what, so we try and complement each other. I feel like that makes no difference whatsoever. We could all three of us be pyromancers, and I don't think it would make any real difference.
As long as you've got Cardi there for his big time bubble, I think that's the main thing.
Did you see, I think it was Eurogamer, Wes at Eurogamer put up a piece yesterday about how in the end game, people are already just booting Devastators out of their squad because they're the only class that can't do high DPS, basically. And so once you get to the end game where it's about killing as many people as possible, as fast as possible, they're just useless. So it's, if you're a Devastator, like me, you just, you're apparently just getting into games and they're like, nope, see ya. Just sucks.
I remember having that with, I think it was the Division 1 maybe, where I got into the end game stuff and I was trying to build up my gear score, but I wasn't quite good enough to some of the higher level players. And every game I joined, I just get booted out immediately because my gear score was crap.
Yeah, this is the same with all of these games. Like in Destiny 2, when the raids came up, you get booted if you didn't have. There was a specific fusion rifle. I can't remember the name of it now, but it was a fusion rifle that would build up its attack speed the more you used it. Mm. And basically, it was the one hit shot to make sure that some of the bosses would go down. If you didn't have it, you were booted out the fucking team. It was like, no, we don't want you.
Jesus, ruthless, aren't they? Mm. Anyway, let's talk about something a bit more light, a bit more fun. Joe, you've been playing It Takes Two
This is very much we haven't prefaced this, but it's very much the updates episode because there's nothing else fucking going on.
Yeah, it turns out nothing's really coming out this week or happening, so just talk about what we're playing.
If you weren't already sold on It Takes Two, let me tell you that having finished it, I cannot imagine a world where it's not right near the top of my game of the year list at the end of this year. It's amazing. Fucking amazing. It's I've not played a game this like rich in ideas since Super Mario Odyssey. Like it's got, I know I've compared it to Mario before and it's a very tired thing, but it's got that like careening thing where it just feels like the developers have gotten bored and just been like, fuck it, we'll do the next thing, and nailed that, and fuck it, we'll do this, and nailed that, and it just all the way through. There's maybe one section that I thought wasn't as fun switch up in mechanics as any of the rest. Mm-hmm. And like every other time, every hour, you're doing something completely new in a completely new place. A lot of people have a problem with the story. I think it's quite fun. I quite like the mad book that shouts at you and goes woo all the time, like
Dr. Hakim.
Yeah, it sounds like who's the wrestler that goes woo, Dale?
Ric Flair.
He's like he's like a book Ric Flair.
Oh, I love that.
And and it's just it's just so nice. It's just such a great time. I don't have much to add to it. I think the ending story wise is a bit duff, but if you're in it for the story, I mean, you're playing the wrong game. It's just so silly and fun.
I love what I've played so far. The thing I love the most about this is also the thing I kind of hate the most, because I just want to play it, but convincing my wife to pick up the controller for a session is quite tough. But once she gets into it, she enjoys playing it. But I do kind of, especially because of our jobs and stuff, I feel like when I get games, I just blast through them kind of as quickly as possible. And this is, I'm not being able to do that, but I'm also getting to spend quality time with my wife playing it as well. So it's kind of like, you know, a double-edged sword, really. I desperately want to play it. Well, I kind of wish it did have matchmaking, but I completely understand why they don't. They want to force you to play with your friends and your family and your loved ones, right? And I mean, that was reaffirmed. We did, so tomorrow, actually, there's a video going live with Joseph Farris, the creator of the game, who's doing, responding to IGN comments. And it's really good fun. And he mentions this several times about how, you know, the game's about love and it's about sharing your time with your loved one as well, and how passionate he is about couch co-op as well. So I love that about the game, but also I really want to just carry on playing it. She doesn't like to play more than an hour, and that's quite... That's difficult for me.
I will say I'm very lucky to have Anna in my life, because I don't respond well to doing badly in games, as Dale has seen when I play Overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
And thankfully, Anna's response to me being like, for fuck's sake, is just to laugh in my face. Right. Because if she actually got upset by it, I think we would have broken up. I'm not just talking about her play of it. Like, there are bits of that game that are hard and will frustrate you in the right way. You know, it's always your fault. It's precise enough to make it feel right. But yeah, there's some stuff in there where you're like, Jesus Christ, we've got to do it. It's fun.
Yeah, even early on, I found some of the boss battles to be, like, I know if it was me and, say, you or Caddy or whoever playing it, it wouldn't be too much of a challenge. But when you've got someone who's not completely, like, used to, you know, third-person controls and stuff, they're, like, proving quite tricky in the early days. Like, there's the one where the nails constantly falling down on you.
Yes.
Like, she was really struggling with that for a while.
It's game design language as well. Like, it's that feeling of... Every time I play a game with Anna, I learn something interesting about the stuff that I've ingested over the years. The one that really got to me here that I had never thought about before is that as soon as you see a circular shadow in a game, you know something's going to fall on it in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason to believe that. Like, that's not a normal thing to think. So when we were playing, I was like, oh, you know something's coming, right? And Anna was like, why would I? I was like, oh, yeah, because... shadows don't appear from nowhere where something is about to be. Like,
that's interesting.
It's really interesting, those bits of language you learn invisibly. It's really fun.
I found the thing that she was struggling with a bit was rhythm. So the idea of, like, when something's spinning towards you, knowing, like, getting your timing of your jumps in between the spins, that was something, like, I just took to like a duck to water, obviously, because we were used to playing games like that, but Loz has really struggled with. Also, the third, using two sticks at the same time, that she is not into that.
That is,
she always moves one and then moves the camera afterwards.
That is the classic, like, when I played games with my dad when I was a kid and just gave up after a while. Because it's just, it's so odd how, this is not new stuff to say, but it's so odd how natural a feeling that is when it is, like, quite a bizarre bit of dexterity that doesn't attached to any other bit of your life. Like, you would never do that for anything else. It's
very true. Yeah. All right, have we been playing anything else, guys? We got anything else we want to talk about before we move on?
I would like to bring up, this is classic IGN UK fodder, I'm sure you'll agree. A documentary about art forgery that I watched recently. Genuinely, so it's an hour and a half feature documentary on Netflix at the moment, or at least Netflix UK, called Made You Look. Its central mystery is kind of solved within half an hour, and it's more about the people involved. Basically, one of the oldest, most famous, and most influential galleries in US history shut down in 2011, I think it was, after people found out they'd been selling forgeries for 20 years. Forgeries made by... or sold by seemingly one woman. And it's basically about how this came about and the central mystery is whether the dealer at this gallery knew she was selling them. And she's on camera being like, I had no idea I was taken in. And everyone else is like, no, she fucking knew. and it's fascinating. They made like $86 million over a couple of decades just through forgeries. And it turns out that those forgeries were the only thing keeping that gallery open. And the thing that I loved about it, it's not like a classily made documentary. I think it's a TV documentary. So there's a lot of like big, silly music and stabs of noise when bad things happen. It doesn't feel prestige, but it doesn't really matter. The subject matter is so interesting. And just the interviewees, because all of these people, everyone they're talking to, are like top of their field in one thing. So there's like incredibly, you know, billionaires lawyers or art forensics experts or guys whose entire life is dedicated to studying the one dude's paintings. And the interesting thing about this is that makes everyone fucking weird. They're all like, there's guys who are like dressed like disheveled princes and like a dude, like just people who I think the interesting message of the documentary that it never says out loud is, if you think you're the best at something, you will never admit that you've got anything wrong. And so there's all these guys who are like, the ones who certified these paintings as real and are now going, oh, I never said that. And it's like, well, you wrote it down and said you definitely did. It's just like a really good collection of people and a really weird story that takes some interesting turns. And also, he's never on screen, but there's just the dude that owned the gallery is Armie Hammer's dad. I didn't know Armie Hammer came from like a billionaire family. This whole thing is like, at the very end, you're suddenly like, by the way, this is Michael Hammer. And then there's a picture of Armie Hammer with him. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's really strange. It's great. If you've got an hour and a half and you're interested in art forgery, get involved. It's brilliant.
That just randomly reminded me of the Eric Andre film on Netflix.
Bad Trip. I watched that the other day.
Yeah, I watched it the other day as well. I think it's because towards the end of the film, there's the art gallery scene, art installation scene. That's what it reminded me of. Have you seen this, Matt? Are you a fan of Eric Andre?
I am aware of who he is. I've not watched a huge amount of Eric Andre material.
It actually feels less bizarre than some of his other stuff. It's more of a coherent story wrapped around prank material, like hidden camera pranking, basically.
I didn't know that going in at all, that it is it's like a road trip movie with fictional characters. It's just that all the comedy scenes are real pranks that they filmed along the way, Jackass style. Like, it's quite odd.
I think it's a good sort of starting point for anybody. Instead of watching the show is fucking insane, bizarre shit. And unless you like just surreal, just wacky nonsense,
it's avant-garde Jackass.
Yeah. Whereas the film feels like much more of a softer touch for that. It feels like an opening for someone who's not used to watching Eric Andre stuff. There is some scenes in there which are mental, where crazy things happen, but they are really fun. I don't want to say anything about this film, but I would say if you are into, you know, like hidden camera pranking, but you also want a nice coherent story to take you along the journey. It has a lot of heart as well.
It's genuinely quite a soft, like, it's quite a gentle film story-wise. It's just it has these detours where Eric Andre will be regularly naked and smashing into things.
I'm just going to say two words. One, the zoo, which was incredible. And two, the Chinese finger trap as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the Chinese finger trap. That's quite... this is the thing, like... When we're saying this is a soft entry point for Eric Andre pranks, this is still a film where he is regularly pretending to have his dick pulled off and stuff. Like, it's not it's not like Watch With Your Parents Eric Andre still. The bit I would say, Dale, and for anyone else who has watched it cryptically, is army recruitment. That bit, not being very much in like the spectacle of it, is just the most awkward watch.
His commitment to the role is a sight to behold.
And actually, do you know what I really loved about it? And
post credits,
like when so they show them revealing that these are pranks to all the people that they've pranked, and it ties up the heart of the film really nicely because you see how much almost everyone he's pranked along the way kind of enjoys finding out that that's what happened. There's no one that I saw in that was truly upset. Although I did see an interview. There's a bit during one of the pranks where they are chased out of a shop with a knife. That was their first day of filming.
Oh, no.
and the other guy, what's he called? Lil Ren? Lil Ren Howery?
Oh, I'm not sure.
He's in Get Out as well. I can't remember his full name. But he said like he nearly quit after that day. On the first day of filming, because it is so that's the one prank where they could legitimately have died doing this. Like, it's absolutely insane.
But you're right though. It never feels like, obviously during the film it feels like these people are the butt of the joke, but afterwards it just feels like they were part of, like, you were part of the performance, and it's a surprise, and everyone always seems so happy to be like, I think they're mostly relieved that this person wasn't as crazy as they thought
at the time. It's very strange. I can't, isn't it bizarre that an Eric Andre prank film was at one point the biggest film in the world for like a week? Netflix has done something strange to popular consciousness. That would never have happened.
It's well worth checking. It's quite a short film. I think it's like 90 minutes as well. It's well worth checking out if you like prank stuff and you don't know much about Eric Andre. And if you like Eric Andre, you know exactly what you're going to get. So,
oh, God, yeah. Get in there. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Alrighty. I think it's time for an endless search, guys.
Okay, then.
Go on, then.
inside. It's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you inside. I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you inside. I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
Okay, so we've got one written in by Matthew Jones, and it caught my eye, and you might see why in a minute. I'll read his email. Hi guys, while listening to last week's Endless Search, I had an idea for one for you to try. It will take no effort from me, but the host will have some work to do. That was true. I did the work.
I can't believe Dale actually did the work. That's unbelievable.
It took me 5 minutes. It was fine. Okay. Using the PS5's ability to look at how long you've played a game for, the host names a game title and the contestants have to guess how many hours the host has logged onto that game. I'm sure you can come up with some kind of point system where the closer you are to the answer, the more points you get. Again, I'm being lazy, but I'm at work, so that's my excuse. I'm thinking of calling it How Long Did I Last? But that's a bit shit, so feel free to change it. I've stuck with How Long I Last.
Dale, I don't like that I have to ask how long you've lasted, all right?
I do like that, so that's why we're sticking with that title.
Also, because you're a platinum hunter, you're going to last very long.
Well, this is... Wow. I looked at this game and I was like, oh, this would be rubbish for me because everything would be about 3 hours. except Monster Hunter. Whereas for you, God knows what these numbers are going to be.
Well, I've chosen 6 games and I've also got one as a tiebreak in case we need it. But I've gone for the bigger games because most of the time, not every one of them, but I've got your 2 hours as well.
Really?
So we can go into that afterwards. But I'm thinking, if we both write down a number on a piece of paper, we reveal it, closest gets a point. I think that's the simplest way to do it. Right. Are you guys ready for the first game?
This is going to be such a creepy look into your bizarre way of playing games.
Let me get some paper.
All right. Oh, Matt's going in too strong. I'm going to do some commentary. He's got a nice pirate ship behind him. What's that all about, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Have you got a little Lego pirate ship, Matt?
Oh, that?
Yeah.
That I made, for anybody that can't see it, I've basically got a Blackbeard ship behind me. My housemates kind of gave it for me for Christmas, and it was made out of, it's a jigsaw puzzle.
Oh, what?
Whoa. Yeah, it's a 3D jigsaw puzzle. It's got lights in it as well.
Holy is it plastic? So is it plastic pieces?
Then? No, it's cardboard pieces.
What? And it stays up like that?
Yeah, it looks incredible.
It took me 6 hours to make, and it came out a lot bigger than I expected. There's nowhere else to keep it.
Right, first game, Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Ooh.
How many hours? How long did I last? Have we both got a number?
Yeah.
That's been a lot of writing.
I was writing the name out.
Okay, let's see your answers. Or actually, say your answers, I guess, for the audience. Okay.
I've gone for 55.
So 45.
The answer is 64.
So
Joe gets the point.
Did you go back in for the plat? Is that what you were doing?
No. So what you got to bear in mind with some of these, it's not always the platinum. Sometimes it's for work as well, because I have to go back in and do capture and play things through several times for work. That's why I remember you mentioned recently about The Last of Us 2. I've got 99 hours on The Last of Us 2. But that was mostly because for work stuff. I was like replaying I was trying to find secrets and stuff.
I suppose we did a like ending explained and all of that, didn't we? So
Exactly. Joe, I don't think you played... Oh, I couldn't see your list. Said you hadn't played it unless you didn't log
Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
I have not played Final Fantasy VII Remake.
There we go. But Matt, you obviously did. And do you want to guess how many yours hours are?
I think mine's probably about 45.
So yours is exactly 64 as well.
Oh, is it?
Holy shit.
Exact same amount of hours.
I mean, I do adore it, so...
Have you got the platinum?
No, you've got to replay it twice to get... Well, sorry, you've got to play it over
the hard,
again. Yeah.
Hard mode as well, and I didn't have the stomach to do that.
Can I ask you... I feel like I've asked this already, and this is probably better for off, but, you know, it's podcast, isn't it?
Go
it's
on.
The time we talk. A thing I would like to know is, obviously, I got it on PlayStation Plus. Should I just wait for Integrade, or should I play
it now? Well, you can't upgrade it to Integrade. I mean,
it's just an add-on anyway, so I don't see why not just play it now, and then you'll know if you truly gel with it.
But is it going to look way nicer? That's a good point. I could start it. How long does it take to get into the proper bit? Does he have a big old tutorial section?
Not really.
Maybe I'll Yeah, you've played the, obviously, the original opening section, right? We did that as a show. You could maybe just do the first reactor, get a feel for it, and then come back for Integrate.
Maybe I'll do that.
How
much better does it look? What have they actually improved?
They've got to make sure that those fucking... A, the doors, because there are so many doors. But yeah, the background, like when you're very, very high up the pillar and you can see Midgar on the ground and it just looks like a kid's drawing, like that's got to be improved.
When everyone was talking about how good the graphics were in that game, I couldn't believe it. I mean, obviously there's a lot of beautiful stuff in that game, but some of those backgrounds were hideous.
I think it's like 90% good to 10% bad.
Obviously, I haven't played much of it, but... like anything in the main game, but I've seen a lot of it. Definitely didn't look as good as Final Fantasy 15 to me, which I still think looks astonishing in places. Like some of the character animation and the way those some of the stuff moves. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
let's play the game
anyway. Yeah, next game, No Man's Sky.
Oh wow.
You like No Man's Sky, don't you?
I'm also really interested in how much I've played this.
Oh, I have that answer for you.
Yeah.
I do have the platinum on No Man's Sky, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea how hard the platinum is for it, though. I mean, you will have had to have got to the end.
Just have to put
end.
A lot of time in.
Yeah.
No, you don't actually. You don't have to do that.
You don't have to get to the galaxy bit.
No, that takes fucking 800 hours or whatever. anyway, okay. We both got an answer?
Yeah.
Okay,
Matt, what's your answer?
I'm going to say 150.
Ooh, I've gone Joe, what have you got? 78.
Matt gets the point. It's 142.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Because you go back for every expedition, expansion as well, yeah.
Every update, I usually go back and put 5 to 10 hours in checking it out and stuff. Joe, you've put 44 hours into No Man's Sky.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
A good old chunk. Matt, you put 4 in. Wasn't for you.
Well, I only bought it when, when they did like the VR update and all of that kind of stuff. That's when I bought it. And I just kind of like, I potted around in it a bit and never been back.
Yeah. I did a lot. I did my thing with all of these kind of games where I got obsessed with scanning and almost nothing else. So I was just going to planet to planet going, is there a new kind of centipede for me to find, please?
Matt, with your hours, these are just PlayStation hours. You might see in games coming up, you know, you've got different, you play on different devices as well.
So. Mm-hmm.
The next game though, Rainbow Six Siege.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus.
And bear in mind, I only play on PlayStation. This game. I don't play it on PC, except for preview events. And I have both your numbers for this.
Have
you got answers, boys?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think how many days we played in a row and then just add up that as hours. Okay.
All right. Okay, Matt, what's your answer?
600.
Wow.
600.
I've gone considerably lower at 181.
Okay, so Matt gets a point because it's 547.
Jesus Christ, Dale.
Yeah, I put a lot of hours in that game, turns out.
Did you play a lot at home?
There would be periods where I would play at home a lot, and then I would go months without playing at home for a while. And when I was trying to get better, when I was actually trying to get good at the game, I put a lot of hours in at home on my own. Anyway, Joe, you put 190 hours in yourself. And Matt, obviously you play it on PC as well, but you put 210 hours on PlayStation.
Yeah, I've got about the same on PC as well.
That's bizarre. I can't believe you played more than me on PS4, and yet we were playing on that game before you joined IGN on PS4, and I don't know if you had you? Didn't you start the game on PS4 when you joined, Matt?
Oh, no, so PS4 was... I'd never played it on PS4 before I joined IGN, and I got to exactly the same, what do they call it, like, containment level or whatever your in-game rank is. My PlayStation account is now equal with my PC account.
Wow.
Nice. Next game, Fall Guys.
Oh. This is another one you like.
You haven't got another one yet, though, have you?
Well, no.
Squads mode. You've got to get back
in. I've been trying it. I've only had one win in squads mode. Turns out you always get stuck with a couple of idiots on the team every time.
That's no way to talk about Cardi. That's not fun. Fall Guys. Oh, this is it. This is one of those ones where I can't, because it came out during quarantine, so I have no idea realistically how much you've played.
Oh my God, it came out less than a year ago. That's insane. It feels like about 4 years that game's been out for now.
Yeah. Okay.
What we got? Matt?
Well, I know that I've definitely got about sub 10 hours in it because I never took to Fall Guys. I reckon you've got about.
Four guys.
Do I? I reckon you've got 75.
Okay.
I've gone 201.
Ooh. Jesus, I'm not that mad.
I just thought you might be really into it at home.
I am. I've got 85 hours in it, but not 201. So Matt gets another point.
If you've played 600 of Rainbow Six, all right, anything's on the table here. You can't scoff at me.
Can you imagine how many hours? I should have checked how many hours Cardi's put in Avengers at this point. And Overwatch. Mm. God, actually, we should have done
Overwatch is absolutely wild. I've seen, he's talked about that before. I can't remember what it is, but it made me want to throw up.
Okay. Next game, big one, one of the best games of the year, Friday the 13th, the game.
Yes.
Matt, I couldn't see this on your list, but Joe, I've got hours for you.
I've only played it once, but I might not have played it on my console. We did a lovely Halloween evening, didn't we, once, where we had Gavin Krupa over.
Big Chad energy.
Right, what we got? Joe, you go first this time.
For 42 hours.
Ooh, okay. Matt, what have you got?
I went for 60.
So Matt, it is 59 hours.
Hey, Matt's absolutely battered me in this game.
He's just got me sussed. Yes. That's all. Joe, you've put 13 hours into Friday the 13th as well. It's very apt.
Excellent.
Keep it at that.
I'm never playing again.
Okay, we got one more just for fun. I've also got a tiebreaker as well, but the last one is Rocket League.
Oh, interesting. I don't really have
Matt,
a sense
I looked
of
on yours and you had 0 hours and 0%, so you clearly installed it at one point and never played it.
I downloaded it when it was free I download literally every PS Plus game regardless of whether I'll ever play it, and I think I've actually played it on PC, but I don't get on with Rocket League. It's not my kind of deal.
So before Euro IGN, it was for a period just before Overwatch came out. This was like our lunchtime game.
Yeah,
you're feeding me information here because I don't know what your feelings are.
Yeah. No, it's great because I didn't know either. Because I came in right at the tail end of that. I think the last time you played Rocket League was with me, and I'm not taking that as a slight, but you know, might be.
Yeah.
Okay. With that in mind, I've solidified my guess.
Go for it.
Of 110 hours.
I've also gone for 110 hours.
Oh my God. It's 45 hours. It's a lot less than you think. But Joe, you've put 93 hours into Rocket League.
Have I really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. I'm rubbish at that game.
I do worry sometimes wonder, whether just leaving things on the menu counts as this time
as well. I am interested in that because I'm sure I haven't played that. I played quite a bit when it first came out. My brother still plays and is very, very good and will send me messages saying he's the Pelé of cars, which really made me laugh.
The tiebreaker one I had, and we could just do it for fun, it was Peggle 2.
Ooh. Interesting. I mean, I'd play that just for Ode to Joy.
I've never played Peggle. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, from what I can see, you guys didn't play it on PlayStation.
No, I played it on Xbox.
This is one of those games, Taylor, that you might have played like 700 hours of, because I know it's quite like small and snackable.
Well, isn't it really, really hard to get the platinum as well?
I've got it, mate.
Yeah, but isn't it like one of those ones where you have to kind of get chance-based
situations? Yes, there's a lot of chance situations. I can barely remember, it was a long time ago. To be honest, but I wish they would make a Peggle 3.
Me
I'd
too.
Be all over it.
All right,
you got an answers?
I've gone for 81.
Okay. 90.
Ooh, so Joe, you get it. 70 hours.
I finally got another point. 70 hours in Peggle. That's time well spent, though. I like it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Like it's perfect. Like podcast material as well. Like, obviously the music's great, but sometimes you can just, it's a sort of game you can just play while you got music on in the background.
It was the only correct use case for the Xbox One snap feature that ever existed. Do you remember that? Where you could watch TV and then have it snap to the side and it was vertical. What a good idea. I wish that had worked for other things and not been shite. Yeah, that would have been good.
All right. Thank you, Matthew Jones, for sending that in. That was a good
I liked that.
Ego trip. I know, I liked it. Yeah, and it also, like, it's a cool little bit of research going on and just having a look at some of the hours for games. Like, you surprise yourself.
It's a peek into Dale's frightening mind. That's what I like.
Okay, feedback. Matt, you're up first.
Yeah, I've got this one from Dr. Charles Williams.
A real doctor?
Yeah, well, I mean, he says he's a doctor. I have not seen his doctorate, so cannot verify, but we'll assume he's honest. Hi, gang. First, to weigh in on the running story of Cole's mum's blended egg, including shell, and lemon, including peel, hangover cure monstrosity. It's definitely a true tale. Cole is my friend and I lived with his mum for a year. She's
what?
Well into...
He's getting his mates to write in to validate this.
She's well into alternative food trends like raw cooking and eating eggshells. It's so her.
Right, I just... Sorry. Cole is my friend and I lived with his mum for a year. Is this like a stepdad situation where it's like, yeah, me and him are mates?
I was thinking it's more like a you, me and Dupree sort of situation.
Uh-oh.
I mean...
Yeah, sorry.
Unpick that as much as you want.
I mean, the thing is, we've taken this completely, you know, Cole could be listening to this like, who the fuck is Dr. Charles Williams? He's not my mate. Anyway, sorry, let's, raw cooking, eating eggshells.
Yeah, one time she even did a Cambo Cleans where she had frog venom applied to her skin, resulting in copious vomiting, hallucinations, etc. But that's not my story to tell. Cole, write in. Tell us about your mum's mad remedies.
Wait. Frog, is that... That's like one of those go into the jungle and have a vision quest type situations, isn't it? Getting frog venom.
Far Cry 3.
Where do you get a regular supply of frog venom from as well?
Oh, I can get frog venom tomorrow, mate.
Oh, I could get you, mate.
I could prime it to you.
And that's all he's got to say about Cole's mum. But... For nan recipes,
I can't believe we're doing mum stories now. This is how far we've come.
For nan recipes, I was often fed sticks of cheese wrapped in ham as a child. A winning combination, I'm sure you'll agree. Nan also used to give me sandwiches with an off-brand Lurpak equivalent, spread an inch thick on both sides. Yes, I was a fat kid and still struggling with it now, to be honest. And then the tone's about to get a bit more somber, so let's pay our respects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She passed away on Boxing Day of last year after a nasty brain hemorrhage and a slow fading away. Over the years, she spoilt me with every console from the PS1 onwards and countless games, inadvertently moulding me into the towering nerd that I am today. Rest in peace, Sheila Jones. She would never in a million years have understood what a podcast was.
That's fair.
Cheers all, Dr. Charles Williams.
Wow, what a ride that was.
Good on you, Sheila Jones.
Yeah.
I love inch-thick butter and PlayStations, so she sounds like a ledge.
All right, next one's from Justin in Massachusetts. Do you know what? When you've got a bit of a lisp, pronouncing Massachusetts is not the easiest thing in the world.
I thought you did well.
Hello there. I've come to confess my newfound guilty pleasure game. Lately, I have put nearly 20 hours into King of Retail, which if you haven't played is a retail simulator. Manage the categories of items you sell, which items from those categories hire, train and manage associates, floor plan layouts, you get the idea. Coming from over a decade of management at Walmart before moving on to greener pastures, for C's sake, I should absolutely despise this game. Yet here I am, yelling at my screen because someone I hired to run the register just gave me someone $30 instead of charging them $140. What game or games do you find yourself enjoying even though you shouldn't, or the general consensus is it's shit? Thanks for the entertainment and for God's sake, respect the C.
I just want to point out, I'm fully behind for C's sake. That's good. I'm glad that's creeping into the language.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll just get it out of the way. Dynasty Warriors, now we can say the rest.
There's definitely games that I know are fundamentally not very good, but I still end up playing them. I guess I mean, I don't know about what Cardi actually thinks about Avengers. Does he actually like it or not? I don't know. I get the impression that he understands it's not good, but he still likes to play.
Cardi and I think have different, have the same opinion on the game. It's just he commits to it more, which is that the moment to moment, like playing the game is fun. It's just that the game doesn't let you really progress ever after a certain point. So yeah, I think that's, I do think he enjoys Avengers in and of itself.
I guess with Friday the 13th, like, the general consensus was that it's a poor game. I think what I enjoy more there is the playing with my friends and the moments that we create while we're playing the game as opposed to the actual game itself. So I'd say, yeah, fundamentally it's a bad game, but I enjoy playing it.
It's mostly mobile games for me. Stuff like, I played Tiny Tower for years. Do you remember Tiny Tower?
Yeah.
That was, like, it's one of those ones where it's just clicking. It's just clicking up. And for some reason, I've got a broken brain. So that's fair enough.
What about you, Matt?
So I don't generally play anything like this. I've got like a weird mindset. I don't play a lot of mobile. Well, I don't play any mobile games. And I don't play any like Switch games, which are just those kind of things where it's you play for 10 minutes and put them away. And those are kind of quite often a bit shit. And generally, I only find myself playing good games. What I am guilty of, watch a load of shit TV.
Yeah.
I've curbed it a lot in recent years, but at one point, I can remember when I used to live with Jules, who works at Gaming Bible, I think I was watching 23 different shows a week.
Fuck.
Like, active shows. And I was so every day there'd be like... Yeah. And this was my thing. Like, I got so into the CW. So I was watching all of Arrowverse, like Supergirl, like Arrow and Flash and stuff like that. I'd watch like Gotham. Remember Gotham?
Oh, God,
I used to watch that on weekly. Stuff like The 100. I used to be well into all of that kind of like, I guess, teen style trash.
Yeah.
And I used to love it. Like, I knew it was trash, but there's something about it. And even now, I won't watch everything that's on the CW, but sometimes I look at things and go, you know what? That actually looks quite fun trash. So I like Riverdale. I haven't watched much of this season, but it's because it's so outlandishly and sort of like almost knows it's bad, so it's intentionally quite camp. There's something about that that's a guilty pleasure for me. I will absolutely watch the new Powerpuff Girls show that they're doing. That's live action.
Yeah. Like, 100%.
That looks wicked. It will be shit, but I will enjoy it nonetheless.
I'm ready
You mentioned the 100. Is that the one where it's like a bunch of teenagers on a like an island trying to kill each other or something?
Yeah. It was very much. I actually, the way I got into that was, this was before I worked at IGN, but I read whoever wrote the review, probably Matt Fowler, wasn't it, for the 100. And they said it's sort of a bit like Hunger Games. And at this time, I was in a phase where I really liked Hunger Games. So I was like, I'll watch that. And ended up watching it for like six seasons and then realized...
God.
It's probably quite shit by this point, so I've got something else to do with my life.
I watched the first couple of episodes of that and I was like, this is not for me. It's a bit too American, like cheap television. It didn't sit with me at all.
I loved, like, Buffy was a thing that molded me as a kid. Like, Buffy and Firefly and Angel were huge parts of my childhood. Also, I fucking love Doctor Who, even though it's shite. Like... so there's plenty of stuff that kind of like I've still got that attachment to kind of cheap produced American genre shows. But yeah, I watched nowhere near as many. Like, I think probably the most recent thing like that I like Sabrina, and I watched all of Sabrina.
Okay.
But like, I don't watch any of the current Arrowverse stuff unless they do. Sometimes they do this mad thing where they do a big crossover event between all the shows and they all come together in their kind of big Avengers moment. I've no idea what led up to that, but I'll watch those two episodes and get a kick out of it.
Cool. Joe, last email.
The last email is from Jeff Smith from Pittsburgh, the Steel City, he says. that's Sheffield, actually, so sorry, Jeff.
Come on, mate. Have you seen the full Monty? Come on.
He says, what's up, you dirty degenerates? Just kidding. You guys are great. What a way to start. Maybe that's like a big Pittsburgh thing. I'm just going to pretend everything's a Pittsburgh thing in this now. I'm writing in to talk about what a pleasant surprise It Takes Two is. Correct. Me and my girlfriend played A Way Out when that came out, so I kind of assumed it would be close to the quality of that. Not that that was a bad game or anything. Disagree. But it was. Haha. Oh, okay. That must be a Pittsburgh thing.
He does this a lot, doesn't he?
Anyway, towards the end of the game, he says that. Towards the end of the game, I asked my girlfriend what her favourite segment of the game was. And honestly, we both struggled to find a favourite part of the game, because there are that many great parts of that game. These don't really spoil the mechanics of It Takes Two. They're just locations. Yeah. My favourites were definitely the space part in her bedroom and the cuckoo clock. Gives you some sense of the breadth. Mm. But goddamn was this game diverse and did everything great. I'm going to skip this section, this sentence, because I think it does give away one of the best twists in the game. But it is a section of the game that he is referring to that I agree is amazing. I don't usually write into stuff like this, but this game definitely inspired me to. I'll give this game the prestige 10 conkers out of 10. Oh, man, people in Pittsburgh love conkers now. This is the best.
Yeah, brilliant.
My question is, what was your favourite segment of It Takes Two, Respect the Sea? Well, yeah, you've kind of half referred to one of them that I don't want to give away for a game mechanic reason. In terms of just pure setting, which I think is more fair game to talk about, there is a sequence where you are stuck. Actually, no, I think one of the best, I think one of my favorite bits is being in like essentially a Duplo kingdom, as in like a medieval fantasy place, but built out of bricks and like homemade stuff. That's really good. There's also a section set inside a snow globe. And the things I love about those bits, which I think I've said before, is those are the moments where the game sort of stops for a bit and it's given you a few new mechanics, but it's not just a linear path through stuff. It just goes, this is kind of an open area, go tool about, see what there is to look at, and just have a nice time looking at things before you carry on. And I love those. It does a few of those bits along the way. It reminds me of Brothers Tale of Two Sons, Joseph Farris's old game, had this one thing. Very straightforward game, very straightforward puzzles, just a really nice narrative experience. But every so often, it would place a bit where you could just sit and look at things and the game would just stop and the camera would pan up and you'd just look at a really nice landscape and it would be for no reason other than that. And it has that same vibe where it's just like, just chill out for a bit, have a nice time, just see what we've made for you and then move on at your own pace. And I love the way he plays with pace that way.
Yeah, I've only been in three environments, so I can't really say what my favorite part is now, but I have enjoyed those moments where you've just said, but where it's like a little game on the side that are very much tailored to, like, this doesn't progress anything in the story, but it's just the two of you can have fun together at the moment. You know, there's a one where one of you goes into a jar and you can perform executions to the other person.
It's quite strange.
Yeah. but it was a nice like break from me sort of having to guide my wife. Okay, we're going here now. Now we've just got a thing in front of us. Let's just have a bit of fun with a whack-a-mole game and stuff. I really like it. Can't wait to play more. Matt, have you played much of it?
Yeah, actually? So I get the impression I might have played about as much as you, Dale. So last weekend, I played it with a really good friend who didn't know anything about it. And I thought that was quite sweet because he had no idea what to expect. But he adores Mario and had no idea that it had got, certainly at the start, has got a lot of Mario to it. Mm.
Yeah.
And then kind of like that space segment. Have you played the space segment, Dale?
No, I haven't. So
with Moon Baboon?
Yeah, Moon Baboon.
I love
Moon
Baboon.
But that one's designed a little bit more like a Crash Bandicoot game. It's kind of a little bit hubby and you keep going back to a place and rotating into new areas.
Oh, nice.
And so that was nice. But the thing that I really got a kick out of is, I think it's pretty much the first area is set in like a workshop outside kind of like their house. And so a lot of it is using like tools, like hammers and nails and stuff like that. And as someone that grew up with a dad who's very hands-on and I worked in a builder's merchant for a long time, there's something that I get out of a kick of seeing mundane things in games, because so much of games is naturally fantastical that sometimes seeing that, like, you, one of the characters is able to carry nails in a backpack, but it's a set of wall plugs that he puts there. And it's that thing that The Borrowers did very well when there used to be The Borrowers TV show, where everything was about shrinking stuff down and making just things that are lying around your house seem like these incredible things. I think it does that so well. I just love, like, using all those elements. There's a bit where you have a boss fight, which I won't explain exactly how the boss fight works, but we've already hinted on there are things like falling nails in that area.
Yeah.
There's also circular saws that change the way the environment works.
Mm.
And all of that is a great thing of seeing these mundane things get turned into really cool game mechanics. And I can't wait to play more of this. Like, I love it so much.
If there's just to check, Matt, have you got to the end of the Moon Baboon bit?
I've done the boss fight,
Yeah. The bit where you're on the moon, without giving away how it deals with that, I fucking love that bit so much, where it starts splitting up what you have to do as two different people in very different ways. Oh, it's just so good. It's I love that game. It's just amazing. Everyone play it.
Yeah. Matt, what if your friend doesn't want to play it anymore or hasn't got time to do it, give me a shout.
Absolutely.
So I want
to
play it.
I'd probably play it a few times through.
Well, that's what I'm thinking as well.
It's also worth playing both sides. Like, I've done the first three or four chapters all as both characters, and the interactions are different enough that no matter whether you know what you're doing or not, you'll have a nice time doing the other thing you didn't get to do. So it's really cool.
Lovely. All right, that's it. Thanks for writing in, everyone. If you want to write in and let us know what you think, maybe what your favourite bit in It Takes Two is, or if you want to talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier, or some sort of food story, because inevitably they keep coming around and around and again. It's IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. And that's it. Cheers, guys.
What music are we doing?
Oh, yeah, shit. What music are we doing? What have we spoken about?
We've spoken about all the same stuff as normal. And I think we've done the actual It Takes Two song before as well.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
What about the music that Zemo was dancing to in the club?
Yes, that's good. That or Ode to Joy from Peggle. I don't mind. Your choice.
I'll go for the Zemo one.
Let's do this.
All right, cool. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.